This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Some of the great soul singers of the 60s and 70s, including Irma Thomas, Ann Peebles, and Mavis Staples, are featured on the new CD, I Believe to My Soul. It's the first release on the new label Work Song, which was created by the album's producer, my guest Joe Henry. Henry is also a songwriter and performer who has made 9 albums of his own. A review in the magazine No Depression said, Henry has become master of his own brainy genre, one that weds the fiercest, most private poetry to edgy sound pastiches, incorporating everything from 70s soul and hip-hop to free jazz and avant electronics. Lately, Joe Henry has been much in demand as a producer. He did Solomon Burke's comeback CD, Don't Give Up On Me, and is now producing a CD that features Elvis Costello and one of New Orleans' most beloved musical figures, Alan Toussaint. They recorded in New Orleans after the hurricane. Toussaint is also featured on the new CD, I Believe to My Soul. Let's start with a track from it. This is Irma Thomas.
Your love is like a chunk of gold.
That's Irma Thomas from the new anthology, I Believe to My Soul, produced by my guest, Joe Henry. Joe Henry, welcome to Fresh Air. I Believe to My Soul is the first CD on your new label. And on the cover of the CD, you write, this is a new soul record done in a classic mode, not a recreation of classic soul music. It's a record authentic to where these 5 great artists find themselves today and in relationship to each other. It's music steeped in tradition, but played with no particular reverence for it. What do you mean by that? Music steeped in tradition, but played with no reverence for it.
Well, Terry, I think if you're making a record with, you're recording any music with a legacy artist, and all these artists, have been around and have been and have contributed tremendously to what we know as popular music in this country. You have to respect where they come from and what their experience, has been to date. But I think it's death to the music to get too caught up in nostalgia or in reverence for what they've done in the past, because then you wind up making oldies music, or it's certainly not music that's a living thing. And it's my goal always. I don't care anything about whether this fits in the genre of soul music or not. I just think, these are soul artists just by their nature, and whatever they do, if it's meaningful to them, it will be soulful, in the true sense of that word.
You have a couple of tracks on your new anthology that feature the singer Ann Peebles, and she used to record on High Records, the Memphis label that Al Green recorded on, and she's probably best known for the song I Can't Stand the Rain, which she not only recorded but co-wrote. Why did you want her on your anthology?
Well, Ann was the first person I thought of, and it's kind of a long story how I came to work with Ann. But the short version is that I was writing a screenplay based on the life of Richard Pryor, and while I was working on it, I was listening to a lot of music that had been really important to Richard in his kind of zenith period of the middle and late 70s. Listening to a lot of Electric Miles Davis and, LaBelle and Funkadelic. And Ann Peebles was an artist that he was really passionate about. So I started listening to Ann while I was writing every day, and I became really obsessed with her. To me, her voice is like Billie Holiday. I mean, she has that same kind of unadorned heartbreak in her voice, and I really became obsessed with the idea of her records and her beautiful song craft and very understated recordings, all the things that I like. And I started thinking, you know, I wonder what Anne's doing. You know, I wonder, you know, if she's still working, you know, how interested might she be in doing something new? So I reached out to her and found her very open and agreeable to trying something. And that's kind of how the whole thing started to snowball.
The Anne Peebles song I Want to Play is not a song that you would associate with a soul singer. It's a country-flavored song written by Bob Dylan. Tonight I'll be staying here with you. How did you come up with this as a selection for her, or did she choose it herself?
Oh, it came to me in a dream, Terry. You know, there's so much classic soul music from the 60s that has a lot in common with the great country music of the 60s as well. And I think the structure of the songs are, you know, wildly similar. And I don't know why it occurred to me that it was just such a beautiful song and it has such a melancholy spirit that I thought suited Anne. You know, and it was a while, I think, you know, when she went back and heard Bob's version, I don't think she heard it as a song for her to sing. But because I pushed her a bit and she's a very accommodating person, she sat down at the piano one day and kind of worked out an arrangement where it sounded like a song she could have written, you know, and I think she heard it once she sat down and started playing with it a little bit.
It's interesting that you kept your confidence even when she told you it was wrong for her.
I had to do that a lot, Terry. Not with her specifically, but, you know, all the artists that I worked with, I had ideas on their behalf, you know. I mean, I came out of the blue for most of these people. I don't think any of them had any idea who I was when I first got in touch. So, you know, I was, you know, having to adopt a posture of, you know, a certain amount of, you know, cheeky confidence, you know, just to start having a conversation. And I started having ideas on behalf of these artists as I started thinking about, you know, wanting to work with them.
Well, I think this sounds terrific. Let's hear Anne Peebles singing the Bob Dylan song, Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You. And this is from the new anthology, I Believe to My Soul, produced by my guest, Joe Henry.
Throw my ticket out the window. Throw my suitcase out there too. Throw my troubles out the door. I don't need them anymore. 'Cause tonight I'll be staying here with you. I should have left this town this morning, but it was more than I could. Strong, I've waited all day long. 'Cause tonight I'll be staying here with you.
It's Anne Peebles singing a song by Bob Dylan on the new soul music anthology, I Believe to My Soul, which is produced by my guest, Joe Henry. Joe, do you feel like you learn things about singing, working with these incredible soul singers?
Of course you do. I mean, and I think one thing that all these singers have in common that I worked with is none of them are the, you know, the flashy type of singer. I mean, many of them have incredible chops as singers, but that's not their orientation. I mean, there's a real understated quality to their songwriting, you know, those of them that are writers, and to their vocal delivery. And that's something that I'm really seduced by. I mean, I don't really care anything about, you know, vocal acrobatics. It just doesn't mean anything to me any more than, you know, someone playing guitar that way. It just goes right past me. But someone who is evocative in a very contained, very intimate way, I find that, you know, really compelling. And I think all these singers, you know, have that gift. So, you know, that's something that, you know, for myself, I'm always trying to do.
As a singer yourself, did you try to like measure your singing against theirs, or did their singing affect you in any way? I mean, your style of singing is really different.
That's a polite way of putting it.
The salt singers,
my style of singing is very different. You know, I'm as a singer, I'm a character actor. You know, I'm like the Burt Young of of singing compared to anybody I was in a room with. But yeah, of course, I hear them and I think about trying to find ways to be evocative on my own terms in the way that I think that they are evocative as singers. And that's probably the closest I can come to, taking an inspiration from them directly as a singer myself.
You know, what you said is interesting about as a singer, you're a character actor. Because as a songwriter, you're a character writer. I mean, you're often writing in the voice of different characters as opposed to writing, confessional, true first-person kind of songs.
Oh, sure. I can't stand that, Terry.
Well, does the character writing come from feeling that you're a character actor as a singer? Like, which came first, that approach to writing or that approach to singing?
Well, I think when I started out, when I was a young, I was 10 or 11, when I was listening to singers and songwriters that I found significant, and I still do, some of the same ones. I think even when I was 11 and I heard Randy Newman, I knew he wasn't writing about himself, and it never occurred to me that he should be. I thought a songwriter should have the same license that a filmmaker or a novelist has. And to that end, I've been just as influenced by great short story writers, as an example, as any other songwriters. I think it's really limiting to talk about songwriting only in terms of other songwriting. When I was very young and I'm listening to Randy Newman or to Bob or to Tom Waits or someone like that, and reading Eudora Welty at the same time or Garcia Marquez, I'm always thinking in terms about just, how is the story getting told? And it never occurred to me when I started out that I was supposed to be writing about me. I thought it was and I still think so. I think it's an incredibly arrogant stance to assume that would be interesting to anybody.
In an article that you once wrote, you talked about the impact of hearing when you were young. Ray Charles singing the McCartney-Lennon song Yesterday and Lorne Greene singing Ringo. And you talked about how these songs really hit you in the gut because they were both about mortality, and that even though you were maybe six, you realized that. So I'm interested in hearing a little more about how lyrics spoke to you when you were young, particularly those kind of songs about mortality. I mean, I remember one or two songs like that in my own life that really scared me, but I was drawn to them because of that.
Well, same with me. When I heard Ray on the radio, and I can still remember it, I mean, it would have been 1967, I think, so I would have been six. And I lived in Atlanta at the time, and I was absolutely terrified by this laying in the dark of a room and hearing Ray sing that song. And I knew that he was talking about, about his ultimate death one day. I mean, it really did terrify me, but I was completely enthralled by it. I mean, I find him, probably the greatest, singer of, of my lifetime. Because I believe everything that comes out of his mouth, I swear to God, when Ray was, out there, shilling for Pepsi, I still thought it was pretty funky and I didn't really have a problem with it.
My guest is songwriter, singer, and record producer Joe Henry. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is songwriter, singer, and record producer Joe Henry. The new CD he produced is called I Believe to My Soul. The anthology that you just produced, I Believe to My Soul, features some singers from Memphis, some from New Orleans. One of the singers from New Orleans on that CD is Alan Toussaint, and here's one of the key figures, behind-the-scenes figures in New Orleans rock and roll, early New Orleans rock and roll. He wrote the songs Mother-in-Law, Coal Mine, Lipstick Traces, and he's a record producer as well. So you've teamed him up on a CD that you're producing right now with Elvis Costello. Now, they already knew each other. Why did you want to bring them together for a CD?
Well, they've worked together before. I mean, Alan was on a record of Elvis's back in the late 80s called Spike. And then Alan actually had produced a track for Elvis and the Attractions back in the mid 80s for a Yoko Ono album. So, they have a relationship but had not really seen each other for years to speak of. And I think after the hurricanes happened and Alan relocated to New York, where Elvis is living at least part of the time, they kind of renewed their relationship, and Elvis started thinking in terms of, you know, how important Alan was, not just to him, but to many of us. And that idea fueled this concept to do a record together, which we started just after Thanksgiving of this year. A very quick record. I mean, the whole thing recorded in about 11 days.
You started this CD after the hurricane?
Yes. I mean, we started Thanksgiving weekend and recorded for a week in Los Angeles and then a week in New Orleans, actually.
Where did you record?
One of only two studios that is up and running. It's called Piety Street. It's on the edge of the Ninth Ward.
And what were you surrounded by? Were there other people around? Like, was it pretty much deserted?
I don't have words to tell you what New Orleans is like right now. I mean, I'm really glad that we went. It was really important to the project and to Alan that we go. And I can't imagine having finished the record at this point, you know, and having not done, you know, a chunk of it in New Orleans. But I was devastated by what I saw there. I mean, I've worked there a lot in the past, but had not been there for years. And I thought I had prepared myself for what I was going to see when I went down there, but I had not. It was a wildly emotional time, and a very productive time, but a very emotional time.
You've brought a track. The album hasn't come out yet, but you brought a track to play for us. Would you play it for us and introduce it?
Sure. This is a song that Elvis wrote just after the hurricane, I think even, you know, within that first week, before this idea for the record came together. But I know he was thinking a lot about Alan and thinking a lot about the devastation that he was seeing on TV the way we were all seeing it. And the song is called The River in Reverse, which will be the name of the album as well.
Now, I want to play another track that you recorded, and this is for an album that you produced by the singer Solomon Burke. And he's a great soul singer who was probably best known in the 60s. This was an assignment. You were asked to produce him. But once you were given that assignment, what was your approach to working with him, and how did you try to work with him in choosing material?
Well, the first idea working with Solomon was, again, like, not to make a record he'd ever made before. So, you know, I had an idea to make a record that was, for him, very stripped down and pretty rootsy, you know, kind of folksy in its nature, you know. But, you know, I told him at the time that, you know, I wanted him to be a band leader as a singer, you know, like Sinatra was. I said, we're gonna find some songs for you to sing, and we're going to put a band together that knows how to follow you, you know, emotionally, wherever you go with the songs. That's what the arrangements will feel like. And it was all new to him to go into a studio with a band who didn't have arrangements written for them. You know, when he was making records with Jerry Wexler at Atlantic in the 60s, I think he came in and there was a band sitting there with charts, and they would run through it a couple of times. And once they had read the charts pretty well and he'd gotten a good vocal take, they went on to the next song. But the idea of kind of discovering the character of a song with tape rolling, which is the only way I know how to work, really. He'd never made a record like that before. But he had, you know, he'd bought into the idea, or at least he'd embraced the idea that he was going to let me work the way I wanted to work, whether, you know, it made any sense to him or not. So I tried to find songs that I just thought he could embody. And I always take the coward's way out and, you know, hire only great musicians because, you know, if you get people who know how to listen, you know, who are song-oriented in a room, it's not hard. It's really not hard to come up with something that's musical.
Joe Henry will be back in the second half of the show. The latest CD he produced is called I Believe to My Soul, and it features soul singers of the 60s and 70s. Here's Solomon Burke. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
To make amends for the love that I never, ever, ever, ever shown. Just don't give up on me. Every word is true. I'll give you my everything.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Joe Henry. He's produced a new CD called I Believe to My Soul, and it features soul and rhythm and blues singers of the 60s and 70s. He's also a singer and songwriter who records under his own name. I want to play a song that you wrote, and we're going to hear it two different ways. You wrote it. We'll hear your version. And then we're going to hear the version Madonna recorded of the same song. And I want to play this back-to-back because I think it's so instructive about the flexibility of a song to hear her version and your version. You do it completely differently, and if you weren't listening carefully to the lyrics, you might not even know it was the same song.
Well, that's happened many times. You know, I've got good friends who knew both versions of the song, and it never occurred to them that it was the same words going by. You know, it's been a really good lesson for me as a songwriter because I'm very lyric oriented. But I realized, you know, when that song kind of happened for her, I mean, she had a big hit with it, that, you know, it really doesn't matter what you're saying, you know, if the groove is convincing, you know, I don't know why it took me, you know, to be 40 years of age, you know, whatever I was when it came out, it took me that long to finally figure out that, you know, the groove was everything, you know.
Well, your version is a tango, and hers is more of a groove.
That's right. And I thought, you know, I thought tango is what the kids wanted, you know.
Oh, and how right you were.
Yeah. Still have my finger on the pulse of the
of the young America.
Young people.
Yes. So talk a little bit about writing the song, you know, lyrically and musically, and then we'll hear it.
Oh, you know, it's always the way. I thought the song was a complete throwaway, you know. I had just moved and set up a new studio at the guest house at my home, and was looking to just record anything, just to see if all my things were working, and I needed something to record. So I wrote that song in about 25 minutes or something, just to give myself something to do. And I was kind of embarrassed by it, to be honest. I thought it was a little bit. It starts off a little bit Spoon in June, you know. You know, it kind of takes a cryptic turn there towards the end. But, you know, I just thought it was, you know, a trifle. You know, in the right hands, clearly, you know, a trifle has turned into some very handsome shoes that I'm wearing right now. I wish you could see them.
Well, I like your version a lot. So let's hear your version and Madonna's version back to back. And this is the Joe Henry song, Stop.
Tell the bed not to lay like the mouth of a grave, not to stare up at me like a calf on its knees. Tell me love isn't true, it's just something we do. Tell me everything I'm not, but don't tell me to stop.
That's Madonna back-to-back with Joe Henry, performing Joe Henry's song, Stop. Now, people might be wondering, how did Madonna get a hold of Joe Henry's song? And there's an interesting story behind that that starts with the fact that she's your sister-in-law.
That's pretty much the whole story. Yeah, she is. I mean, I've known her since I was 15 and she was 17. We went to high school together.
And were you dating your wife when you were that young?
No, I was not. My wife would have been about 14 or something at the time. 13. I didn't know her yet. But I became close with that whole family. There's a big kind of sprawling family. We were all living north of Detroit. And I became very close with my wife a few years down the road. And, here we are.
So from what I've read, it was her idea to send your song to her sister. You were reluctant to do it.
I was very reluctant. I mean, that's just a line I don't cross. I mean, or I hadn't crossed. I mean, I have a very good relationship with my sister-in-law, and I attribute that at least in part to the fact that, you know, I don't need anything from her, and, you know, she always returns my phone calls because I'm not trying to pitch anything to her. So I wrote the song and played it for my wife, and she said, I think you should send it to Madonna. You know, she's making a new record. I think she could sing this. It'd be great. I said, you know, if I was going to pitch something, it wouldn't be this. You know, I maybe could come up with something, but it wouldn't be this. So she said, well, make me a copy and I'll send it to her. So she did, and I heard from my sister-in-law about 36 hours later, and she said, what are you going to do with this? And I said, that's just another song on the pile, you know? And, you know, she had her way with it. And, I think it's fantastic.
So what was the experience like of having... a hit record on a Madonna album? I mean, the whole sense of like royalties from songwriting, was that something really new to you, having a hit with somebody else's version of your song?
What you're trying to say, Terry. I know what you're trying to say. it was new to me, of course. It had been a complete abstraction to me to see back end on anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'd never gotten a significant royalty check in my life, you know? I live from, you know, record or publishing advances, but it was a complete abstraction to think about myself being recouped with my publisher and getting, you know, big checks in the mail. But I find I'm very adaptable. I got used to that very quickly.
I want to ask you about another song that you wrote, and this is a song called Richard Pryor Addresses a Tearful Nation. It's a song you wrote for Richard Pryor, as if you were Richard Pryor, like in his voice. You talk about writing character songs.
Yeah. I wrote it in the first person, and I didn't, you know, I've loved Richard for a long, long time, but I didn't sit down and think, you know, I'm going to write a song about Richard. I would never have supposed to do such a thing. And it's not a Woody Guthrie kind of, you know, the ballad of Richard Pryor. You know, it doesn't tell his story. But I started writing the song, and as I was writing it, you know, I always feel like for myself, you know, I've almost never, ever had an idea about a song and then sat down and tried to put it into verses. The process of writing is the process of finding out what I'm writing about. I just start writing like I would start writing a letter to you if I was going to. And as I was writing a letter to you, I would find out what I had to say to you. Writing a song is the same way. And I started writing this song in the first person, and it occurred to me that I was thinking about Richard. And as the song started to go on, and it happened really pretty quickly, as the best songs seem to, I felt like I was kind of writing about, you know, his view of himself as an American, you know, hating, you know, what this country is, and yet somehow desiring some kind of validation from it. It seemed obvious to me when I got through with it, but I didn't know when I was writing it, you know, that's where it was headed. I just, you know, I was putting one foot in front of the other.
How did the song lead to actually meeting Richard Pryor?
Well, I wrote the song, and then I recorded it. I mean, it's something that's really important to me because I recorded it with the jazz great Ornette Coleman. So to find myself working with Ornette, was a huge milestone for me. I mean, it was as validating as having a hit song on the radio, if not much more so. Once the song happened, I was signed to a record label that was owned by Disney at the time. And I think Richard was such a hot potato, and Disney is so afraid of any kind of exposure that the fact that I had a song with Richard Pryor's name in it on my record, they insisted that I get permission from Richard. So just by a complete fluke, you know, I've got a friend and mentor the songwriter and producer, T-Bone Burnett. And it's not like I'm dropping names like crazy, and forgive me, but I was out one night at Musso and Frank's in Los Angeles having a martini with T-Bone and with Wim Wenders, the filmmaker. And this conversation came up, and out of complete desperation, I said, does anybody at the table know Jenny Pryor, who was at the time Richard's ex-wife and then his wife again after that? And T-Bone, in fact, knew her and set up a meeting for me. She was very touched by the song and gave me permission to use it, allowed me to use an old photograph of Richard that appears in the album package, and that began my relationship with them.
So through writing the song, you ended up actually meeting Richard Pryor, and that led to you writing a screenplay about Pryor's life. He asked you to write the screenplay?
Well, what happened is that once the record came out that contained the song, I ended up writing a piece for Esquire magazine about Richard and about Ornette and how the idea of one led me to the other. And Richard and his wife apparently thought it was a really beautiful piece about Richard, and you know, one thing led to another, and they said they'd been, you know, approached for years about a film biography based on Richard's life, but had never had a writer attached. And I think they liked the idea of somebody who was not a screenwriter, kind of approaching it from a fresh angle. So my brother David and I, who was a screenwriter in Kentucky, spent about 2 years writing a screenplay, kind of, you know, at their say-so to see what we might do. And I think we wrote a pretty good one. Though it's has not been made into a motion picture, but it was quite an experience, and you know, led me farther down the road to, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing.
Well, Joe Henry, a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Terry. I'm a big fan of your show.
Oh, thank you. Joe Henry is a songwriter and singer with several albums under his own name. The latest CD he produced is called I Believe to My Soul. From Henry's own album, Scar, this is his song Richard Pryor Addresses a Tearful Nation.
Take me away. Carry me like a dove. Take me away, carry me like a dove. Love me like your life. Let me feel you near. Remember me for trying.
Coming up, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews a new CD by Mary J. Blige. This is Fresh Air.